Final seconds of the game. A chance to score, and the chance has gone begging. If your business's commerce platform keeps missing the target on golden opportunities, get the MVP you deserve. Get Shopify. Shopify is the commerce platform revolutionizing millions of businesses worldwide. Whether you're a garage entrepreneur or IPO ready, Shopify is the only tool that you need to start, run, and grow your business without the struggle. Shopify puts you in control of every sales channel. So whether you're selling signed football boots from Shopify's in-person POS system or you're vending vintage shirts on Shopify's all-in-one e-commerce platform, you are covered. And once you've reached your audience, Shopify has the internet's best converting checkout to help you turn them from browsers to buyers. What I love about Shopify is how, no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. And Shopify is truly a global force, powering Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across over 170 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. This is Possibility, powered by Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ranks, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ranks to take your business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/ranks.
Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Rank squad, and welcome to Ranks FC and Champions League takeaway here on the channel. My name is Jack Collins, and I'll be your host today. And joining me, our transfer guru, Champions League guru, all the gurus, is Mr. Dean Jones. How you doing, mate?
Yeah, I need to become a penalty shootout guru, mate, based on what we've seen over the last couple of days. Wild. We've just obviously witnessed Atleti squeeze past Inter Milan. And then the night before, obviously, Arsenal have done the business on penalties as well. So I think the ultimate takeaway for this Champions League round should be, let's bin extra time. It is a waste of time. It's a complete waste of time.
I mean, if someone had scored a winner in the 120th
minute. They
don't.
This is the thing. Recently, we watched the Carabao Cup final. Nothing happened. We've watched Arsenal. Nothing happened. We've watched this. A bit more happened, but still no one scored. Like, it's just pointless. I think when you think back to when extra time was invented, and like it had relevance, and like that was it, people didn't play as much football. You didn't see as much football. I think these days, like the amount that players are already exerting themselves throughout a season, like if they haven't been able to separate, especially over two legs in the Champions League, forget about it. You can't separate these teams in open play. Go straight to the shootout. Like, I get it. If it's a one-off game, maybe there's a bit more inclination to go extra time. But we don't need to see another half hour on a night like that.
Play silver goal. As far as I'm concerned, bring back silver goal. If one team's winning by half time in extra time, that's when you call it the most
first goal wins, something like that. Yeah, like first golden goal wins.
Golden goal. That's the ultimate FIFA move, isn't it?
But it didn't work, did it? Because both teams would just be like, yeah, we're just going to sit back and wait. Nothing works. Like, once you're into that mindset, you're just basically resigning yourself to pens, unless usually an error leads to a goal.
Yeah, perhaps. It has been interesting, though. Two penalty shootouts in two nights. And it's the first penalty shootouts we've seen in the Champions League since 2016, which had Atleti as part of it. It was the final that night. It's kind of wild that you go 8 years without a Champions League penalty shootout and then suddenly two come along at once. I hesitate to say London buses, but it feels like that, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does a bit. Yeah, both won by the home team as well. So that's something to beware of. Honestly, like Lautaro Martinez, it was like a bag of nerves. You see, when he even steps into the box to pick up the ball, we couldn't pick it up.
Yeah,
it was like bizarre. It was like, you are one of the best footballers in the world, mate. And you are trying to like chip the ball up and then pick it up. And It took him like four attempts to get the ball to the spot and then puts it on the spot, like kind of flattens it with his own boots, smashes it high and wide by about 10 yards, and then looks back at the penalty spot, which he's just kicked himself.
High, wide, and nothing handsome, isn't it?
There was nothing wrong with that penalty spot. Lautaro is a fantastic footballer, great finisher, except when there is pressure on him moments like that.
Yeah, I mean, I do think in some ways he's cursed. He should have had, what, two assists tonight. Let's come on to that game. It makes sense to start there. And I'm going to start us with the takeaways. My first takeaway is that Atleti were really brave with the ball tonight. And I said after the first leg that in the Champions League, and especially away from home, Atleti revert to that kind of stoic type. And I thought that hurt them massively in the first leg. I thought they were heavily outplayed. And to be honest, Inter were unlucky not to be more than 1-0 up. But I don't think anyone can question the commitment to trying to win this tie tonight. And I know that sounds silly and obvious, but we have seen Atleti in years gone by wait and wait and wait and then put everything on those last 20 minutes. And Sam tweeted during the game, basically being like, most teams who are 1-0 down coming back into a home leg, it's like nothing silly. Don't let them get a second. And Atleti were completely the opposite. To be honest, I heavily respected how much they tried to get at this Inter side. And we talk so much about how Inter are excellent. And one result here, especially on penalties, doesn't change that. But I think if you're going to come up against this Inter side, you have to kind of put the fear of God into them if you're going to stand any chance of beating them. And I thought that Atleti showed just how proactive they can be across the course of what we saw tonight. Yes, agreed. The extra 30 minutes wasn't great from either side. But given that Atleti weren't perfect, the strategy wasn't perfect, I really was impressed with how brave they were on the ball, how much they wanted to get at Inter. And how much, to be honest, they left themselves open in order to try and make this a game. And they've come out on top of it. And I do hope that when we see this Atleti side going on in the competition, we're now looking at a team that have a little bit of, you know, nous, yes, but actually that spirit to be like, okay, when we do have the ball and we do dominate teams and we do attack, there's almost nobody that we should fear, especially at the Wanda. So yeah, I'm intrigued, but a really, really impressive performance, I thought, from Atleti over the course of most of this 90 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, obviously this wasn't the game that I was mainly watching until extra time, but you know, I'm watching the other game and I see Di Marco's put Inter 1-0 up, means they're 2-0 up on aggregate. And part of me is like, yes, there's going to be no extra time. We can just go on and record our podcast. And then like 2 minutes later, it pops up that Griezmann's got one back. And I'm like, oh no, they've just remembered what's in their DNA. This is a team that doesn't give up. This is a team that does fight. Like, this is Diego Simeone. And to fight back, draw 2-2, then win on pens, It's big. That's a big moment. And I don't think there'll be too many teams that will relish the prospect of going through to a quarter final and having to go into that stadium.
No, absolutely not. Kevin Bannon says here, he says, Atleti will cause a next level head loss for Arsenal when they draw them in the next round. It's not something you'd disagree with on paper. I don't necessarily think it's just for Arsenal. I think that they'd be able to cause a head loss for most teams. And look, the man in black conjuring a ring of fire in that atmosphere tonight, I thought. And these are the things. It gets to knock out football. And Atleti at the Wanda becomes a problem. I don't care who you are, they're a problem. And when they have this amount of capacity in the side, when they have the game changers that they have in this side and off the bench now at full strength, you know, I got laughed at a little bit and I'll come on to it because, you know, it's a crying shame is my second kind of take, is that we've lost one of these sides early, because for me, this felt like two genuine contenders to go on and, you know, get very, very far in this competition, if not win it. And I got a bit of ridicule for where I put Atleti and Inter in my rankings, because I said, I think this was two teams coming up against each other who on another year, or if they hadn't come up against each other, could have been semi-finalists. But I think this game basically justified that. Felt like two teams who could beat anybody on their day, coming up against each other in the round of 16. And despite the fact that Atleti are through, I do think that there is a kind of sentiment that teams will be looking at and going, I'm really glad Inter are out.
because I don't think anybody would have wanted to play this Inter side the form they're in Serie A. And as they grew into the competition and you know, finalists last year, obviously, I think your Real Madrid's and your Manchester City's are going to be delighted to have seen the back of Inter at this stage of the competition. And I do think that it's a shame. And look, it's Inter's own fault for not winning their group and therefore getting a tricky draw at this point. But I do think it's a shame that we've lost one of them at this stage.
Yeah, no, it's a fair point. It was always going to take a certain characteristic of a team to keep Inter at bay. And there are plenty of teams that are left in the competition that are great technically, but why not have that fighting spirit to see Inter out of this competition? But Atleti did have it. Just got to mention this comment from Durav, who says, seriously, I was so livid at Riquelme when he missed that chance at the end. It's 4:30 a.m. here in India, and I do not know how I will report to work tomorrow. It's funny, I was just speaking to somebody else that I work with, and he watched that game in India too. I was like, mate, what time is it? And he's like, it's 3:30 a.m. I was like, go to bed and watch the highlights in the morning. He's like, no, this is too good. And I was like, do you know what? This game does have a bit of a feel. It felt a bit like a final. Like the two teams were playing at such a high standard. Every substitution that was made seemed to just increase the quality of the game. It was real, real high quality stuff. And as I say, I only watched like the last few minutes of normal time and extra time, but the whole intensity did really feel like a final.
Yeah, agreed. Or at least a late stage game. And
yeah, you know, it's certainly late stages,
That's because of the quality that was there. I thought Riquelme, you know, obviously he makes that miss, but I thought he was absolutely brilliant. And Drew's right, obviously, to say that he was livid as an Atleti fan, I imagine. Oh, actually, maybe not. Maybe just because the game was going on late.
Maybe the game was just going on.
It did feel like Roro was brilliant when he came on. And I've got to say, you know, there was a lot of, not necessarily criticism of Atleti, but I think there were question marks when they brought back Riquelme and Lino this season. And they were like, yep, we're going to rely on these guys who were out on loan last year, youngsters who we believe in their talent. Both of them, I thought, were excellent. But Riquelme's ability to get the crowd going again was crucial. And it brings me on quite nicely to my third point, which is that Inter's game plan, I actually thought, was fine. They just couldn't execute it in the crucial moments. And obviously, that comes back and you look at players who miss big chances. Obviously, Thuram missed one really big chance and another header, which I think was a little bit too high for him. There was a lot of criticism of him, but I thought it was just a little bit over his head. Obviously, Barella fires one straight at the goalkeeper. It's a little bit light of the pass, I think, from Lautaro to set him through. But there was a lot of end-to-end stuff in this game, which, to be honest, I think Inter probably were quite happy with, right? We all know how devastating they can be on the break. But also, I thought that in the second half, they had a brilliant sense of being able to slow things down when they needed to and just take the sting out of the game in the crowd for the most part. And look, there was an incredible sequence about 60 minutes in where, you know, Atleti just had a couple of chances. The crowd was really, really up. The stadium was wound up and lively. And Inter just knocked the ball around in a rondo for about 30 seconds, and it just calmed everybody down. They slowed the game down really nicely for the next 10 minutes or so, dropped off a bit, knocked the ball around at the back. They made Atleti run. It was really good game management. And if one of those two chances for Barella or Thuram in particular, should score, if either of those chances go in, Atleti win the game, and everyone is sitting here praising the way that Inzaghi was able to handle the furnace that was the Wander tonight. Instead, they miss late on. Atleti score an excellent goal, and the whole tie turns, and it goes to a penalty shootout. And as we all know, that's a test of nerve. And in that atmosphere, Lautaro lost his, I thought, in particular. Also, I'm not sure why it happened in the Arsenal game yesterday, but all three of the first penalties were the same way for Oblak. I was like, no, don't do that. You have to keep them guessing a little bit. But just generally, I thought that it will be looked back at, and Inter will look back at this as a massive opportunity missed to go and knock on the door of trying to win this trophy again. But I thought in general, the game plan was fine. They just executed it badly.
Yeah, no, that seems fair for sure. I do think it's a missed opportunity for Inter, because I think there would have been part of them that genuinely believed that they could go one step further than last year and actually go on and win this thing. Like they've 100%. Been that good. They've been that good across this season so far. They've got Serie A pretty much sewn up, and would have had a real good opportunity to keep their fully fit team held back for the big European night. So I think they'll be absolutely devastated right now. They've let this slip through their hands. But look, Atleti, who knows how far they could go now. Look, they could go and lose the next leg, in the next round, in both legs, and just fall out of the tournament. They could go on and win it. I don't know. I don't know what we'll get now from this team.
They're a confusing bunch. We're going to move on to the second game. But just before we do so, I want to shout out the man in the comments. Clack says, ranks. Great stuff. Getty FPL says, good evening all. Hey, Dean. Elijah in here as well. If Dortmund win next round, you'll double the push-ups. Jack,
oh, and my God, here with never gonna do
Hello
push-ups.
Legends. No, I can't do 50, never mind 100. So that's one of those things. Right, let's go on to game two, which you saw, which was Dortmund 2, PSV 0, which made it 3-1 on aggregate to Borussia Dortmund. Slightly more comfortable scoreline than the actual game was, did?
Yeah, I mean, the second goal was literally in the dying seconds and was completely against the run of play at a moment when PSV could and should have actually drawn things level, and Luke de Jong stuck one over the bar. I think it bubbled up a little bit for him. I think he was unlucky. You don't rate him, so you're going to be
harsh. My Luke de Jong agendas continue. Fantastic stuff.
But yeah, it was a defender falls, they run through, it's game over. But my first takeaway is that Jadon Sancho looks sexy again. And I was very happy with this takeaway until it started to turn a little bit. Elijah says a confident Sancho is a bad man. Yeah, look, he played quite narrow here, Jadon Sancho. Scores a goal, which is a great finish. There was a bit on the TV coverage, there was a bit of a criticism of the goalkeeper. It was Glenn Hoddle, actually, at halftime, saying he felt the goalkeeper should have done better. But Jadon Sancho, like, he gets the ball out of his feet quickly, he sees the space and he arrows it in right next to the post. Like, he couldn't have been more precise with it. I thought he struck it beautifully. He played really in a more dynamic way than we've seen for so long. He's definitely building in confidence. And I was like, do you know what? Fair play to him. Like, he's clearly feeling himself again here. And then 74 minutes, he pulls up with his hamstring. No. He wanders off the pitch, and that's that, and he's subbed. And I'm like, oh, Jadon, surely not. Surely not. He did walk around. He wasn't stretchered off or anything, so he did walk around, but it wasn't 100% convincing that he was going to be fine. So we'll now be waiting and sweating on whether Sancho can continue to be sexy or whether he now has to go and have a layoff. And I hope not, mate, because he had the momentum here. Like, this was go time for him.
Scored a great goal at the weekend, obviously. Send a couple of defenders for a hot dog, turned them inside out and scored at the near post. Some really good stuff. And then I thought this was a great strike. Elijah agrees. There's a great shot between defenders and kissed off the post. But yeah, it would be a shame now to see him sort of arrest that momentum with an injury. I agree.
The good news for Dortmund is that Marco Reus came on for him. Within a few minutes.
He scored one of the seven goals.
Got one of the seven goals that we were talking about, yeah. But he comes on, and then minutes later, Dortmund get this free kick, and he takes one of the best deep free kicks I've seen in a long, long time. It's unbelievable. He sends it deep. Fulkrug sticks it in the net. And I'm like, you're like game over 2-0.
Yeah.
And it goes to VAR and you're like, yeah, it's tight, but it should be all right. It was so, so, so marginal that it was actually frustrating. It was like, I don't know, the top of his arm was a centimetre further than the defender's. I don't know what it was in the end. But I was like, oh, that's so annoying because I want to talk about that free kick. So here I am still talking about it because it was brilliant. But then Royce scores anyway. 95th minute.
Rolls Royce.
Yeah, he seals the points. So good news for Dortmund, even if it is a night when Jadon Sancho limps off. Now, look, this is a surprise, a match. The second takeaway, like, PSV didn't score. Like, PSV, we talked about the other day, like, they're the highest scoring team in Europe domestically. And you're watching this game and you're like, how have they come away from this second leg without a goal. Now, look, in the first half, they did lose their identity a little bit. When you consider what PSV have done this season and how high scoring they've been, but also shutting the door at the other end and not conceding. But they were under quite intense pressure here. I think Dortmund had 60-odd% of the possession in the first half, and there won't be many times, if any times, that PSV have come across that domestically, have done a couple of times in Europe this season. But they weren't themselves in the first half. And in the second half, it was like, okay, look, we know what we're capable of. We know what we can do. Let's go. And they did give it their best shot in the second half. And they should have scored at least one. I mean, having Lozano came on at halftime and should have scored at least one, to be honest with you. We talked about Luke de Jong there. Like, he should have scored one. He'll be annoyed that he didn't. Joey Veerman is absolutely brilliant. Like, I love watching Veerman. He's so good. And there were moments that, you know, where he just like shuffle the ball in a way that so few people are capable of into dangerous positions. And yeah, PSV, honestly, the second takeaway should be like PSV were the better team. They've lost this second leg 2-0. They'll be just thinking, how? Because when you assess the game overall, they should have won it. And yeah, they could easily have gone to extra time, but for De Jong's miss. Third takeaway is I just can't believe they didn't try to expose Nicolas Sula more than they did. Sula is massive, right? And he was playing at right back. And
Sula is massive everywhere he goes. Is that what you're saying?
Literally everywhere he goes. Sula is massive everywhere he goes. And I remember when I'm in pre-season, when I was in San Diego, I went to a game with one of our listeners, and Dortmund were playing a pre-season game and settled down. And Sula, I was like, it's the first time I've seen him that close. I mean, I've seen him play before, but I was way back in the stand, so it wasn't the same. But he was, and I was like, he's massive. He's absolutely massive. And like, and I know that this isn't a new thing that I'm discovering here, but what I want to point out, like particularly here, is that he was playing right back. And up against him, they had Sergino Dest and they brought on Lozano. And I didn't feel like they twisted up or went behind Sula enough times to take advantage of what should have been a weakness in that Dortmund team. Look, Sula, his reading of the game's great. He can pass it great. There was one point where Lozano did try to do him and Sula just takes him out and takes the yellow card. Like, he's happy to do that.
Yeah, but of course, but then no he's worries. On a yellow card. Keep going.
And that
him,
was
right?
Late. Yeah, I mean, that was about 85, I think he got the yellow, I reckon. But
I had this on the second screen, right? So I was keeping an eye on things. And there were a number of times where I looked over and I was like, oh, here we go. Lozano one-on-one with Sula. And he just doesn't run him. I thought exactly the same when Lozano came on. Tillman started out there, obviously, likes to drift inside a little bit more. Can understand quite how that didn't necessarily work to the extent that they were expecting it to. But once you get Chucky on there, one, I thought Lozano was wasteful with a lot of what he came
up.
Yeah. But two, you know, once he's on that yellow card, even if there is that 10 minutes left, 5 minutes of regular time and probably 5 minutes of injury time, you just run him again and again and again. And try and force the issue. And it didn't feel like PSV tried to push that button enough towards the end of things.
Yeah. I guess I should end the takeaway by saying I'll be amazed if Dortmund get through the next stage. I mean, they did start this game well and they were full of intent and they were progressive and they were high up the pitch and they were a bit relentless for a period, but it died out. And by the end of the game, I was like, if they get drawn a bit against one of the better sides that are left, I don't really give them a chance, to be honest.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's going to be very difficult for Dortmund to go through. I don't know which of the other sides gives Dortmund the best chance of progressing, but we'll talk about all of this a bit more on Friday morning when we discuss the Champions League draw. That'll be over on the Patreon, links in the description as ever. Yeah. But that'll do us a Wednesday night's action. Let's move on to Tuesday night's action. I'm going to go back to you again, because the big game of the night, I think, in many ways, and the game that went all the way, all the distance, was Arsenal against Porto, 1-0 down from the first leg. They went through 4-2 on penalties after winning the second leg 1-0. It was dramatic. There were a lot of big scenes at the Emirates. It was all incredibly exciting, dude.
Yeah, it was pretty dramatic, yeah. And Arsenal now into the quarterfinals for the first time since 2010. When Leo Messi scored 4 goals against them at Camp Nou. I saw a good stat on this. There's been 14 versions of the iPhone since Arsenal were last in the quarterfinals of the Champions League. That's how long it's been. And I like to judge time just on how old my iPhone is.
You still got that first iPhone.
I think it was the iPhone, Leo, like 4 or something. Pleased to say I am now up to the 11, but I definitely am due an upgrade because my phone is dying, I can confirm. My top takeaway from this match is that Aaron Ramsdale was never playing for Arsenal again, mate. I feel extremely sorry for this guy, but unfortunately, David Raya has turned out to be absolutely the right decision to sign as their number one goalkeeper. He is the king of the Emirates at the moment, and there didn't seem to be anything really wrong with Ramsdale, but since they've had David Raya, they have been better, and he has come up with
since David Raya has found form. But
yes, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, yeah, but this was his night, and do you know what? Fair play to Ramsdale. When everyone mobbed David Raya after his game-clinching save, Ramsdale was right in there, big smile on his face, joining in. I was like, mate, you've got to become more selfish. Do you think Ronaldo would be doing this if someone else scored the winning penalty? No, you're going to have to change Aaron Ramsdale. But look, ultimately, like, David Raya is proved to be a great loan signing for Arsenal this season. And he will be a permanent signing in the summer. And Aaron Ramsdale will have to find a new club because he can't continue to be a season ticket holder at the Emirates and just be watching these nights. He needs to be going and playing some football. But it was a good save from Raya to get this victory. Look, let's assess it in a bit more detail as the second takeaway, because I am not starting to wonder, I've wondered for a while anyway, but are Arsenal truly ready for what is now to come? Because look, Porto were actually the more experienced side in this tie. They might not be quite as good as Arsenal on a week-by-week basis, but they do have more experience on stages like this, and I think it showed. Porto were very unlucky not to have pulled off this scalp. Look, this is still a young Arsenal team, and this match and the way that they've won it will prove to be valuable experience, but they're probably going to face one of the giant European teams now. Maybe not. Maybe they hope that that they get Borussia Dortmund. But I just can't see Arsenal quite having enough. As it stands right now, Arch in the comments saying, I hope Arsenal draw against Dortmund. Yeah, I bet you do. Yeah, I saw a stat that the last 5 teams who beat Porto all went on to reach the Champions League final. I haven't checked that. I don't know if it's true. But if it is, it's a great omen for Arsenal, but they've still got a lot of improving to do from here. Do you know what it made me think of? What they're going through right now in Europe reminds me of what they went through last season in the Premier League in terms of game management, in terms of how there wasn't quite the conviction that they were truly going to win the league, but they would, and they did manage to come up with big moments until quite close to the end of the season. Now, they didn't manage to win the league, and I don't think that they will manage to win the Champions League. For the same reason, really. This is new for this team. They're back in Europe. They're into the knockouts. This is all progression. And because they are Arsenal, and traditionally they're a big club, and because they are doing so well, we have high expectations of them. But I don't think they'll win the Champions League. And if they don't get past the quarterfinals, then yes, it'll be disappointing. But I also think it's okay. because this is part of the process and Arsenal was still learning. And yeah, I just came away from it thinking, you know what, this is reminding me a little bit of last season.
I quite like it. I think it's a really nice place to be. And Arsenal don't need to be concerning themselves with winning the Champions League this year, right?
They're not going to do the Premier League Champions League double, are they?
I mean, if they did, it would be truly remarkable. And and look, they have the talent to do lots of incredible things. But I think that it will probably come up short one way or the other. But that's not really the point. The point is that this is a massive thing for mentality, right? You get through a game against this Porto side who are streetwise. And look, we saw Atleti today. I think knockout aside, who are technically better than them by playing the game smartly. Yes, there's not much between, you know, Atleti and Inter as there was between Arsenal and Porto. And look, I'd be the first to say that this isn't a vintage Porto. But I thought that they enjoyed that kind of game a little bit more than the games that, you know, we've watched of them in the Primeira, where they're going to Boavista and coming up against a 10-man block, having 70% of the ball and not being able to find a way through. This is the kind of game I think they were able to enjoy themselves a little bit more. I mean, led by Pepe, who was brilliant at the back. It did feel like this is the kind of stage that Porto were like, oh, we could spoil some parties here. And it's a big win for Arsenal in terms of just being able to have the mentality to get through that street fight and get over the line.
Yeah, I think that's true. My final takeaway with this is that Arteta's just going to trust the process and trust these players, that they can go as far as they are capable of going. It was telling that he trusted this team so much, he didn't make his first substitution until a time when he had really no alternative and he had to bring on Gabby Jesus in the 82nd minute. Now, I thought that was quite... It's either he doesn't trust his subs bench at all, or like he just completely trusted those guys that were on the pitch, which is pretty much his strongest team, to get the job done. And then it comes to the penalty shootout, and the guys that step up, they score all of their penalties, and they are so convincing with them as well. And you can see in Arteta, as they pan to him after every kick, how relieved he is, but also that he knows these guys are going to do it, right? Odegaard, Havertz, Saka, Declan Rice, they're his boys, right? And so is David Raya. And you see him, particular players in this team that Arteta kind of treats like his children. This is his group, right? He is growing his team here. And he is so fond of them and proud of them and defensive of them, he will die for this team. I really do. Like, at the moment, there's talk of Arteta walking away from Arsenal and going to join Barcelona. Yeah, not a chance.
No chance.
Not a chance that Arteta is... He's built this over the last few years to get here. They've backed him and they're producing week after week. He's not going to do this to go and start all over again at Barcelona at the beginning of a project again. Like, one day, maybe he does manage Barcelona, sure. But not this
summer. No, not at all.
David Raya in goal, great. Gabriel and Saliba at the core of his defence, great. Rice and Odegaard in his midfield. Then in the attack, you've got the likes of Saka and Havertz. Arteta loves these guys. And yeah, I just can't believe it.
Couple of comments on the penalties, yeah. Because Mad Paul says, did I hear the commentator say something like, upstep Saka, he doesn't miss. And I also saw Elijah say, Dean, I know you were getting war flashbacks when Saka stepped up. PTSD for Dean. But no problems this time. It was...
ultimately, I didn't care so much this time if Saka scored or missed. I'm neutral. Like, I might be English, but you know, if Arsenal lose, they lose. Doesn't affect me too much.
EVO, Ealing's very own.
The other thing that Arteta trusts, before we move on to the last game, is this Emirates crowd. Gone are those days when like they'd boo their own players. Wasn't that long ago? Granit Xhaka was getting booed by his own fans, was it? And like, it is such a turnaround in the atmosphere at the Emirates. This crowd was as loud as anything that has ever been heard inside that stadium since it was built. And they will back this team. They, like Arteta, love this team. And that might be if they are to get through the quarterfinals, they're going to have to make sure that the Emirates is a fortress that night. And yeah, it's a big moment. It's a big moment. They're chasing down a Premier League title. They're into a Champions League quarterfinal. But how does it all end? If they don't win the title and they go out in the quarterfinals of the Champions League, everyone's going to be so disappointed. It's going to feel terrible. But what a season this has been.
It's all progress as far as I'm concerned. I've said before, and I said last year, that there's a difference between, you know, being disappointed and something being a failure. And I think that what we've seen from Arsenal has been progress again from last season, no matter what happens from here on in. Just a couple of comments that I wanted to touch on. Geddy says, Wendell had Saka in his pocket. What a performance until the penalty shootout. What a performance from Wendell. He was absolutely sensational.
Oh, well, yeah, across the two legs. But then, yeah, ultimately he's the reason they're out.
Yeah, a British
which is sad,
says,
isn't it?
Yeah,
he's putting so much.
Says, I want Barcelona in the draw, to be honest. Big up, Dean. There you go, the Arteta derby.
I mean, yeah, I mean, Arsenal would beat Barcelona probably, wouldn't they?
We haven't gone to them yet. We'll talk about them in a minute.
Okay.
But there was
I'm done with Arsenal, mate.
Well, it's all good. Elijah says, I could see Arsenal winning the league, but I can never see them lifting the Champions League. And I thought it was, you know,
never
just an interesting
never.
One. But yeah, never say never, absolutely. Person also said, it's true that each team that's bought Pete Porto in the last three seasons got to the final, and all of those teams then lost the final every time. So there you go. Just one last thing. I saw this from British 87. He said, the most lenient ref ever, by the way, that French homme. And I thought the ref had a really good game. Now, I appreciate that Arsenal fans won't like this, because in a game where one team is employing more dark arts than another, they always want the ref to be stricter than lenient. But I thought he let it flow, and I thought it led to an incredible game of football that had great end-to-end moments, that had those battles in midfield, that people didn't feel that they had to shirk out of challenges. I thought the ref did a phenomenal job in this one, I've got to say.
Yeah, it was. I'd probably back you on that one. It was an 8 out of 10.
8 out of 10 performance. We'll take those ones. We'll take those.
So. You take that every day.
You take them every day from the referee. They don't get more than 8 as far as Dean's concerned. And that takes us on to the final game, which was Barcelona 3, Napoli 1, 4-2 on aggregate. Massive, massive win for Barcelona this. And I'm going to start with them, because this was as intense as we've seen a performance from Barcelona in a long, long time for most of the first half. And look, I described the first leg of this game a few weeks ago as laughably pedestrian at times, considering that it was a matchup between the reigning Spanish and Italian champions. But there was absolutely no sign of that, especially in the first half from Barcelona here. And look, Xavi had come out to say before the game, he was like, I know we're not at Camp Nou, but actually we need this crowd to act like we are. We need this crowd to step up and be part of this and push the players onwards, because this is a difficult game. Napoli a little bit resurgent under Calzona, and Barcelona have been nervy in certain moments across the course of this season. And I thought that both the crowd and the players responded to that comment brilliantly. It felt like an atmosphere that you wanted to play in, and Barcelona rose to the occasion, especially for the first sort of 40 minutes or so. It did really feel like you were able to see a bit of the dynamism and a bit of the work rate and a bit of that ability that we saw last year and has been missing for quite a lot of this season. It's the reason they are in the problem state that they are in terms of where they are in the league behind Real Madrid, and how that drop-off has happened. So much of it, I think, has been down to like a lack of dynamism and a lack of intensity. And look, part of that is that obviously Gavi's been injured for long periods of this season, and no one's been able to replicate what he does for this team. I thought this was phenomenal. Phenomenal from Barcelona in the first half, and as complete a performance from them, I think even in general, over 90 minutes against a good opposition that we've seen this season. So I just wanted to shout them out first and foremost, because if they can keep raising to this level and getting back to a level where they, you know, believe in what they're about, then Barcelona remain a problem, I think, for anybody, because the amount of talent in this team is incredible. And I'll come back to that talent in a second, but I just want to talk about Napoli quickly in takeaway two, which is they've really missed out on making the most of a golden generation in Europe. And I think, sadly, we might not see Napoli here at this stage of a competition for a little while, because not just last night, but generally over the last 2 years with this crop of players, the fact that they've gone out twice in the knockout stages with barely a whimper is probably worth looking at, I think, in more general terms. They were the most exciting team in Europe last year. They got knocked out by a Milan side that they finished, what, 20, 21 points clear of in the league? Yes, okay, they were missing Osimhen in the first leg, but still, this year, they've kept most of that crop of players. Only really Kim has been missing. Okay, Zielinski didn't play and hasn't been registered for the Champions League because he's leaving in the summer, but De Laurentiis has completely and utterly discombobulated them with dreadful managerial appointments where, I mean, in basic terms, he's shat the bed. And with Napoli now getting to a point where you look at where they are in the league and you look at actually, you know, where this team is in terms of rebuild. Yes, there are contracts here, but Osimhen's already talking about leaving. We know Zielinski is going to join Inter in the summer. Ferrara has already said that basically if the right offer comes in, he might be interested in leaving. The replacements who came in this summer and were supposed to strengthen this squad, I really like Jesper Lindstrom, but he hasn't got going yet. Nathan hasn't got going yet. I wouldn't be surprised if this team is now pulled apart. We thought it might happen last summer. I think it will be pulled apart this summer. And when that happens, it's going to take a rebuilding job to get Napoli back in. They look like they're going to miss out on the Champions League this year. That might not be the end of the world, because with a rebuilding squad, a little break from European football or even a stint in the Europa League might not be the worst thing for this new group of players as they start to learn how to play together. But generally, I think that we might not see Napoli for a while here. And when they look back at this in 10 years, obviously, they will look at this Scudetto with immense triumph and pride, and so they should. But they will also look at these two Champions League campaigns and think that was a team there that probably could have won the European Cup. And we didn't really get close either time, especially last year. But I think before this crop is broken up, to get one more go at it this year and to just fall at the first hurdle feels like a moment you're like, ah, that's it, it's gone.
Yeah, I mean, Osimhen will go, but Kvaratskhelia, I think they won't let him go for that reason. They won't lose both of those players in the same summer because it will just be suicide. And I think that might be the one thing that does help them next season. If they're not in the Champions League and they are able to focus domestically again on getting back into the Champions League, and they can keep Kvaratskhelia and they can bring in a couple of players, you can find someone that can replace Osimhen, not in terms of like all-round quality, but I think the goals, you know, you can find a couple of players that are able to share out
Jonathan David season
responsibility. I mean, there are players out there and Italy is a place where, you know, somebody that's not necessarily been performing elsewhere or hasn't been able to push himself perhaps to the levels that you would have expected. Something like David, who, you know, has been talked about to come to the Premier League for a couple of years now and hasn't landed. Go for someone like that because he will deliver. But you're right. There is a chance that this is a dangerous moment for Napoli.
Yeah. And a tricky one without a permanent manager as well. Let's go back to Barcelona for my third point, which is that the future, whilst there is a lot of, you know, noise around Barcelona and the finances and maybe not being able to bring in big name players or managers this summer because it's all so tight with the wage bill, etc., the future is so bright. Because you look at three performances last night. Pau Cubarsí, man of the match from centre back, 17 years old, and dropping a performance on Victor Osimhen that most defenders could only dream of. Lamine Yamal, absolutely exceptional again. And Fermín López, there's something about Fermín that I just love. He's not the smoothest or the silkiest player, but his game intelligence is up there with, you know, the best already. He has that beautiful knack of being in the right place at the right time. And on this week's main episode, right, we talked about Raul. Now, I'm not saying they're similar players. What I said that made Raul exceptional was not his physicality or even his finishing, which was great. but his intelligence to know where to be, to find those spaces at the right time, to pick up those gaps, Firmin has that. And that intelligence in a different way, not as a striker or a center forward, but from to be able to find those runs from midfield, to be able to link the play, to be in the right spot to receive and turn and lay off, to be in the right spot to pop up in the box and score important goals. He's got all of it. And he's so, so young still. For someone to come in with that level of nous, and look, we're talking about a midfield already that's missing Pedri, Gavi and Frenkie de Jong. And he steps in here and just goes, yep, no worries, my time. It was incredible. Like truly, truly incredible. And that's before we get on to Kubasi. And I'm not going to talk about Lamine Yamal because I think we all know how good Lamine Yamal is. He is breaking records left, right and center for every reason. I'm a bit concerned about Barcelona burning him out too early, as they did a bit with Ansu Fati. But I don't think Yamal's talent in any stretch is in question here. But Pau Kubasi, last night, one of the biggest games of Barcelona's campaign. This is the only trophy, realistically, that they can still win this season. You're going up against Victor Osimhen, who is widely considered as what? One of the best three number nines in the world, maybe higher. And the sensible move, or the maybe more conservative move, is to go, okay, cool, we're going to just put Iñigo Martinez in here. He's a veteran. He's played years for Athletic. He came in the summer. He's been a pretty solid presence. And they go, no, it's all good. We're throwing in Pau because we believe in him. And Xavi said afterwards, he talked about him. He basically was like, every time the ball's at his feet, I feel comfortable. And that's the highest compliment I could play him. And his passing last night was exquisite. You know, from the short passes to break the press, the long passes over the top, they should have scored from one of them. Everything he did was truly sensational. And you could hear Montjuic singing, coup, 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 Barsi. And it was really cool. Obviously, that's amazing. You're 17. Mm. He looked so like shocked when he won player of the match. He was like, well, me? All right, cool. That's nice. It really did feel like one of those moments you're watching someone emerge. And there's some brilliant articles about him and his performances today. And there's articles in the Spanish press where people are being like, this kid's probably better than Gerard Piqué was at his age. And these are respected veteran journalists. These are not, you know, someone trying to find headlines for the sake of it. And I know the Spanish press can be like that, but these are old school columnists talking about the fact this kid is special. He is truly quite remarkable. And with him and with Lamine Yamal and with Fermín López in there, and then you add that to Pedri and Gavi, and even the emerging talents who we're not completely sold on yet, you know, the likes of Mark Guey. But then you come back to the ones who've already played, your Alex Baldes, for example. If they can keep this core together, Barcelona might not need to spend all that money on the big guns, because as long as they can keep this La Masia core cooking along nicely, we could be seeing the emergence of a new golden generation. And we know what happened the last time one came through.
Yeah, they're kind of a wild card hit now. I mean, there should be a fearlessness about them, because these young players have got nothing to lose. Like, this is just an unbelievable opportunity to go and play on this stage without the expectations that are usually attached to you if you're wearing a Barcelona shirt playing European football. And especially at a time when the manager has already announced he's leaving. And so, again, hasn't gone that well. We're waiting for what comes next. He's not expected to go and deliver the greatest trophy in football at the end of this season. So why not use that as motivation to actually try and do that? Like, this would be an unbelievable story. And I don't think Barcelona can do it, but it is Barcelona. And there is reason for them to think, hang on, we don't have the pressure that all the other teams in this competition actually have right now. We should use that to our advantage.
It takes me back, because Drew Verley was like, so when we talked about PSV going out, he said, so no underdog story in this Champions League. Sad. Tell you what, that'd be an underdog story. I know it's Barcelona, but that would be an underdog story.
Imagine that, the documentary Barcelona, an underdog story, as Xavi holding up a European Cup.
Incredible. You know, weirder things have happened. This is football. And with that, I think it's probably time for us to call it a day. So all that's left for me to do is to say thank you, all of you, for tuning in to this Champions League takeaway. Thank you to everyone who put comments and questions in the chat as well. Obviously, we've tried to get around to as many of them as possible over the course of this. If you're listening as the podcast, thank you so much for listening. You can join us later in the week. There is a UE Ultras going out on our Patreon tomorrow. That'll be free for everyone. And the Friday Fiesta, looking back at all of the Europa League and Conference League action, the Premier League action, and the German Cup action that's taken place across this weekend, this week as well. And we'll be back next week on the main podcast. But for now, thank you so much for listening. Take it easy. Peace.
Final seconds of the game. A chance to score, and the chance has gone begging. If your business's commerce platform keeps missing the target on golden opportunities, get the MVP you deserve. Get Shopify. Shopify is the commerce platform revolutionizing millions of businesses worldwide. Whether you're a garage entrepreneur or IPO ready, Shopify is the only tool that you need to start, run, and grow your business without the struggle. Shopify puts you in control of every sales channel. So whether you're selling signed football boots from Shopify's in-person POS system or you're vending vintage shirts on Shopify's all-in-one e-commerce platform, you are covered. And once you've reached your audience, Shopify has the internet's best converting checkout to help you turn them from browsers to buyers. What I love about Shopify is how, no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. And Shopify is truly a global force, powering Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across over 170 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. This is Possibility, powered by Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ranks, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ranks to take your business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/ranks.